Welcome to another episode of Too Close to Home, the series where we dig up creepy stories, haunted places and mysteries from our very own Patreon's hometowns. In this episode, we're looking at Tyler, Sandra, Valerie Marie, Thomas and Stu, and we have some good stories in store for you five. Everyone else, if you want us to dig up stories from your area, head on over to Patreon and join our Too Close to Home tier. Thank you everyone for supporting us. And now it's time to hit those lights, sit back, and enjoy. Buffalo, New York. Buffalo, New York is known as the City of Trees due to the vast amount of parks and green spaces. It is also the home city of our valued patron, Tyler, who has asked us to look at Clarence and Lancaster. We'll start with a cold case murder that took place a few minutes drive from Lancaster in Chickawaga. It all began on October 30th, 1982, when 18-year-old James Adamski dressed up in his Halloween outfit and headed to a party at the 5 and 23 bar in Depew. During the evening, James became increasingly intoxicated and got into a brief altercation with other partygoers that his friends said was quickly settled. At around 3:30 a.m, James left the party and was seen walking in the direction of his home on Transit Road between Broadway and Como Park Boulevard. Sadly, James never reached home, and the next day his worried parents reported him missing, as it was very out of character for him to stay out all night and not let them know. Despite extensive searches and appeals, it was several weeks before James's body was found in a shallow grave in a wooded area off of Ransom Road in Lancaster by two hunters on December 26, 1982. He was found still dressed in his American Gigolo Halloween costume. It was reported that James was likely beaten to death with some type of blunt instrument and had suffered numerous wounds from blows to his forehead. The medical examiner suspected that the murder weapon was possibly a baseball bat, a plank of wood, or a tire iron. People who knew James and people who attended the Halloween party at the bar were questioned about the murder, but it led to no suspects. James didn't have any known enemies, and police determined that the bar altercation was not related to his death. Police believe that James was possibly picked up as he headed home, still very intoxicated, by either a stranger or someone he knew. It's now been 40 years since James's brutal death, but police are no nearer finding out who his killer is. Both of James's parents passed away in 2000s without ever knowing who killed their son. Police have always believed that someone in the community knows the truth and believe that now with advanced technology, there's a chance that the murder could still be solved. If anyone has any information regarding this case, please contact Detective Lieutenant James Robinson at 716-683-3120, extension 137. Next, we're going to look at Buffalo Naval Park. Now, we know Tyler has visited this place, and that it's notorious for ghosts and hauntings. The Naval Park is located on Buffalo's waterfront, and is home to three decommissioned naval vessels that served in a variety of military conflicts. There is the USS Croker, USS The Sullivans, and USS Little Rock, and all three are said to be haunted. However, we're going to look at reputedly the most haunted of the three, USS The Sullivans. The ship is an Arleigh Burke-class Aegis guided missile destroyer, whose name is both unique and meaningful. She is the only ship in the US Navy to have a plural name, and her name is in honor of the five Sullivan brothers who lost their lives during the Second World War. Their story is tragic and had long-lasting consequences for the Navy, consequences which are still in effect today. George Francis Joseph Madison and Albert Sullivan, aged between 20 and 27, entered World War II with a specific request that they all serve together and were not separated. Their request was granted, and all five brothers were stationed on USS Juneau. Sadly, their ship was sunk by a Japanese submarine in November 1942, during the naval battle of Guadalcanal. All but George were killed immediately. Poor George survived for a few days floating out at sea with little hope of being rescued, So in a desperate bid to save his life, George attempted to swim to shore, but sadly never made it. The deaths of all five Sullivan brothers was the greatest military loss by any one American family during World War II. Their deaths brought about a policy discouraging the placement of multiple siblings on the same ship. Soon after the sinking of the USS Genoa, a ship already under construction was renamed the USS The Sullivans in honor of the five Sullivan brothers. It was after the USS The Sullivans was decommissioned in the 1960s that the paranormal activity started. Initially, it was minor things like the batteries dying on the ship, the lights flickering for no reason, and unexplained knocking. However, this soon accelerated to unknown whispering and full-bodied apparitions. One tour guide had a terrifying experience below deck when a burned, disfigured figure approached him at speed before disappearing in front of him. Another occurrence happened when a group of tourists were looking around the ship after hours. The guide had turned off the power on the entire ship, but as the group toured the bridge, they observed the radar scanner turned on and functioning, even without power. The most creepy occurrence revolves around a portrait of the five Sullivan brothers that hangs on the ship. It's reported that many visitors find it impossible to take a picture of this portrait without either their camera malfunctioning or light ruining the image, and it's believed George is the restless soul responsible, thought to be consumed by guilt at not being able to rescue his brothers. It is said George Sullivan is responsible for all the paranormal activity on USS The Sullivans, as he roamed the ship, desperately seeking his brothers. Tyler, if we're ever in the area, maybe you can give us a tour one day. Lake Elsinore, California. Lake Elsinore is a city located on the shore of Lake Elsinore, a natural freshwater lake about 3,000 acres. It is also the hometown of our valued patron, Sandra. For you, Sandra, we'll first look at your city's famous monster. Lake Elsinore is the largest natural lake in the state and has a rich history. Over the years, it's been a rest stop for campers, trappers, and gold prospectors. However, nowadays, it is best known for the monstrous serpent-like beast that allegedly lives in its waters. The first account of the creature dates back to 1884, when a witness described an enormous scaled creature with a long neck swimming in the lake. The monster caught the public imagination again in September 1934, when a rancher named C.B. Greenstreet claimed that he and his family spotted the creature, saying it was 100 feet long and had a 30-foot tail. The sighting was printed in several newspapers, and the creature earned the name Elsie, a reference to the more well-known Nessie, said to reside in Loch Ness in Scotland. More sightings followed, many describing the creature as around 12 feet in length, with humps and a reptilian appearance. These sightings continued into the 1990s, and Elsie became a fixture in the Lake Elsinore community, a sort of town mascot, and she even had a sculpture erected. But skeptics point out that although Lake Elsinore is large enough to house a monstrous creature, the lake has wildly fluctuating water levels, and at times has completely dried up on more than one occasion, with no sign of a monster flailing on the bottom. In recent years, Elsie has more or less faded into the background. However, some, especially those who have said they've seen it, insist that Elsie is very real. We wonder, Sandra, what are your thoughts on it? From monsters, we're going to move on to ghosts and a haunted former bathhouse. In 1887, the Crescent Bathhouse opened up to a large crowd of people. The building was one of the most luxurious buildings in Lake Elsinore, and used the local sulfur water that bubbled up to the surface for filling up the tubs, and they became a massive hit with people looking to get relief from various ailments, believing the natural spring waters had healing properties. However, like most things over time, the appeal of public baths faded, as more and more could afford bathrooms in their own homes, and eventually the bathhouse closed in the 1950s. When it reopened as a shop called Chimes Antiques and Collectibles, it seemed the building was unwilling to give up the past, and both the new owners and the customers started to experience strange phenomena. Customers reported being grabbed by unseen hands and being tapped on the shoulder when no one was around. In fact, there were so many instances that made customers uncomfortable that some even refused to go in the shop. Among the resident ghosts is a little girl named Gloria, who used to visit the baths after she lost her legs in an accident, as well as another child ghost, believed to be a young boy who drowned in the bathhouse in 1939. Today, the shop is closed, but the building still attracts visitors and mediums who are drawn to its reputed paranormal activity. We'd love to know if you've ever visited the building, Sandra, and if so, what was your experience there? Let us know in the comments below, or drop us an email. Richmond, Virginia. Richmond, Virginia is the hometown of our much-valued patron, Valley Marie, and is one of the oldest and most historic places in the United States, and is the capital city of Virginia. Its strong links to the Civil War are memorialized throughout the city with museums, statues, and cemeteries. And it's a cemetery we're going to look at first. As we all know, there is nothing creepier than a cemetery, and Hollywood Cemetery in Richmond is no different, and with its colorful history, it's no surprise that it's teeming with spirits. In 1925, Richmond's Church Hill Tunnel collapsed, and several workers were buried alive in the wreckage. As they scrambled to free themselves, a bloody figure emerged from the rubble, with pointed teeth and skin hanging from its bones. The figure ran as fast as it could towards James River, and eventually disappeared into the mausoleum of W.W. Poole, in the Hollywood Cemetery. The entity quickly earned the name the Hollywood Vampire, and to this day, it is said the vampire is still living in W.W. Poole's museum. The vast cemetery is also the last resting place of around 18,000 Confederate soldiers, 25 Civil War generals, President of the Confederacy, Jefferson Davis, and former US Presidents James Monroe and John Tyler. If that wasn't enough, there is also a large cast iron statue of a Newfoundland dog standing over a small grave of a 2-year-old girl named Florence Reese, who died of scarlet fever in 1862. Florence is the only little girl in the cemetery, and maybe in the whole United States, with a distinct statue keeping watch over her grave. And people from all over the world flock to see her grave, just to take a photo of the iron canine. However, the stories behind why the statue is there vary. One says an unnamed merchant knew how much Florence loved his dog, and had the statue placed by her grave as proof of her kind heart. The other says that Florence's father Thomas, who was a pacifist, knew during the Civil War that iron was as precious as gold, so he placed the dog there to stop it being melted down to make bullets, as he knew that not even a desperate nation would melt down cemetery monuments. Whatever the truth, the dog attracts a lot of attention and is believed to be haunted. It is said that sometimes the dog can be heard barking and growling at night, and its position is also said to move, sometimes being found facing the opposite way. It's not only the statue of the dog that is haunted, though. Another notable construction in the graveyard, said to be surrounded by paranormal activity, is the 90-foot stone pyramid memorial to the 18,000 Confederate war dead that are buried nearby. The monument took a year to assemble and resulted in so many strange accidents and injuries that the workers were certain that the monument was cursed. It is said that if you walk close to the structure, you feel a burst of cold air, as well as weird whispering in your ear, thought to come from the restless souls of the believed 11,000 other soldiers, not remembered, who were unceremoniously buried, unidentified and buried in unmarked graves near the site. Next we'll take a trip to the Waverly House. The Waverly House is a private residence on Monument Avenue. Over the years, the stunning red brick home has been known by a variety of names, including Twin Oaks and Oak Grove. The original house was probably built in the late 1700s, and although the interior has been changed over the decades, a lot of the original features still exist, along with the ghosts of the past. When the house was known as Oak Grove, Mr. Benjamin Green lived there, and it's his spirit that is the most active. Benjamin worked as a clerk in a bank for many years, but when $500,000 of the bank's money went missing, Benjamin was accused of stealing it, as he had access to the funds. After a search of Oak Grove, no money was found, but rumors circulated and his good reputation was in tatters. It seems he was found guilty by public opinion rather than evidence. Benjamin could not stand the accusations, and he moved out of his beloved home, never to return. In life, anyway. It has long been believed that Benjamin buried the money in the grounds of Waverley Manor, or hid it somewhere in the home itself, and his spirit has returned, either looking for his lost loot, or still grieving his lost reputation, spending his afterlife in the home he loved in life. Benjamin's spirit is said to be particularly active on the stairs leading up to the bedrooms, and one previous owner of the house, Donald Wiltshire, shared his encounter on the stairs with a little old man with a chin beard who had the exact likeness of Benjamin Green. As well as Benjamin, the bodies of 19 Civil War soldiers are reputed to be buried in the grounds. They were patients that resided at Oak Grove when it served as a makeshift hospital during the war. After their death, they were hastily buried in unmarked graves in the gardens, and it's been reported that at least one of these soldiers makes his presence known in the form of a wounded soldier entity. Valerie Marie, we'd love to know if you've ever been to the cemetery or ever visited Waverley House. If so, let us know what it was like. Canberra, Australia. Canberra is the capital of Australia and is home to important institutions of the federal government, national monuments, and our patron Thomas. It is also unique in that its mountainous location makes it the only mainland Australian city where snow-capped mountains can be seen in winter. For you, Thomas, we'll first look at the mysteries of Lake George. Lake George edges the Federal Highway, 30 minutes from Canberra, and has long been the stuff of myth and mystery. The lake's history goes back millions of years and originally drained into the Yass River, but seismic movement along a fault line caused a significant lift in the land, cutting off inflow from river systems and forming what is now called the Cullerin Block. There is evidence Aboriginal people were in the region and they called the lake Wiriwa, ominously named a place of bad waters or a place of conflict, and it has certainly lived up to its name. The term lake is a bit misleading, as lakes are usually full of water, but nowadays this lake just looks like a large stretch of grazing land. However, less than 10 years ago, it held so much water that it lapped up the edges of the highway, before suddenly disappearing, as if by magic, sometimes retreating overnight. The lake's dramatic water fluctuations have given rise to much speculation, including theories that as the water emptied out, it fills up elsewhere in Australia, or even in China, and some even suggested the idea of mysterious underground canals. Although the truth is there is a far more scientific explanation for the disappearing lake. The lake bed is large and very shallow with no river inflows. This leads to a lot of quick evaporation, so basically more water goes up than comes down. When the lake was full in the 1960s, it was a magnet for families to swim and sail. However, it could be treacherous, and many deaths occurred at both the lake and on the once treacherous stretch of highway flanking, and more than a dozen have lost their lives through drowning or hypothermia since 1949. With deaths come spirits, and one of those is a phantom hitchhiker, the apparition of a young girl who tries to hitch a lift from the side of the highway, only to disappear when cars slow down for her. She is thought to be a victim of the unpredictable lake who drowned there decades ago. There is also the story of the mysterious man seen standing on the side of the road after a nasty crash. Witnesses to the crash, who saw the man, later recognized in the local paper as the crash victim, who had been killed instantly, and at the time they saw him, he was still trapped in his car. Then there are the UFO sightings. In June 1974, an elderly farmer claimed he saw a spherical object land near the lake, and three or four strange creatures. He described them as 3 meters tall, with small heads and no clear facial features, wearing glowing silver suits covering their whole bodies up to the neck. The farmer saw a chute extend down the craft that unloaded metal cases containing cattle. The cattle were then led away by normal humans. Over the years, similar strange lights have been seen over Lake George, and in 1996, a woman and her daughter reportedly saw a bright light in the sky, which hovered above their car, before landing in a nearby field. The woman described the craft as a solid structure with windows, coloured beams and sparks emitting from the underside. She parked up, but got scared and drove away, when a blind light began moving quickly towards her. We'd love to hear if you've ever experienced anything strange near Lake George Thomas. It sounds like a fascinating place. Now we've looked at the ghosts of Canberra in a previous Too Close to Home video, so instead of ghosts, we're going to look at the secrets of the city. If you're interested in ghosts though, Thomas, then we'll put a link to our previous Too Close to Home in the description, but in the meantime, we'll take a look at the secrets of Canberra. It's a well-known fact that beneath Canberra's streets lay vast multi-level underground tunnels connecting many government buildings. The official line is that they are used for storage and walkthroughs. However, there has long been speculation that the tunnels conceal more than just storerooms, and that something more sinister is going on. Despite the persistent rumours and news reports, no one has found solid evidence, but that doesn't mean it's not there. Another place steeped in mystery is the Black Mountain Tower, or Telstra Tower, a telecommunications tower and Canberra landmark that offers panoramic views of the city from its viewing platforms. However, it's long been suspected of containing eavesdropping equipment, with a former technician claiming that the Chinese embassy is the main target. The interview the technician gave is now subject to a D-notice issued by the federal government, advising against further publication. Is that because it was a bit too close to the truth? Deakin Telephone Exchange is another suspicious building. It is also allegedly used for espionage purposes by secret agencies, such as the NSA and FBI. In fact, former Labour MP Barry Jones was so concerned about the rumours that he visited the building to check it out, claiming afterwards that he was satisfied that nothing strange was happening. Perhaps the strangest claims come from the suburb of Balkanen, where it's said there is a top-secret three-level underground base referred to by locals as the Sheep Paddock. Beneath the actual paddock, there are large limestone caverns that allegedly house an underground command post, and the padlock contains antenna and a small shed housing a lift to the underground post. What it is used for is unknown, but over the years livestock, in particular sheep, have mysteriously disappeared from the area. We'd love to know your thoughts on these rumours, Thomas. North Shields, Tyne and Wear, United Kingdom. North Shields is a town on the north bank of the River Tyne, and is well known for its fishing trade and its association with the early days of railways. It was also the childhood home of Stan Laurel, of Laurel and Hardy fame, and a statue of Stan stands in Dockway Square, a reminder of the Star's time of North Tyneside. But more importantly to us, it's the hometown of our patron Stu, so let's take a look at some creepy places from the area. One of North Shields' oldest landmarks is the wooden dolly statue. In 1814, the female figurehead of a collier brig was placed at the entrance to Custom House Quay on Little Street, and stood there until 1850. It was used by superstitious seafarers as a good luck charm, and they would cut pieces of her to take on their voyages. After it was vandalized in 1850, a second figurehead was placed on the same spot. Over the years, with the pieces continually being cut out, the new figureheads were replaced by the defaced ones. This continued until 1901, when it was replaced with wooden dolly number 4 in the shape of a fishwife. A fifth wooden dolly, also a fishwife, was placed in Northumberland Square in 1958 and still remains there. In 1992, a sixth wooden dolly was placed, where the fourth had been, at the entrance to Custom House Quay, and can still be seen there next to the Prince of Wales Public House. Pretty interesting. Next we have the Sauter Lighthouse, which is located in the village of Marsden, a few minutes from Stu's hometown. Sauter was first lit in the 1870s, and was the first lighthouse in the world to be designed and built specifically to use alternating electric current, and in its day was technically the most advanced and brightest lighthouse in the world. It's also one of the most haunted. The spirit of Isabella Darling, who once lived in the lighthouse, is the most active. She was the niece of Grace Darling, who in 1838 was the country's most celebrated maritime heroine, when she rescued crew members of a sinking ship in treacherous conditions. Isabella makes her presence felt by levitating spoons, cold spots, and physically grabbing people. Much of the activity reportedly takes place in the kitchen and living areas. There is also a strong odor of tobacco wafting through the building, thought to belong to another former resident. A lightkeeper, who on occasion has manifested as a full-bodied apparition, dressed in his lightkeeper's uniform. There are also reports of a young girl who was seen near the engine room. People have heard her crying and calling out to visitors. The building has such a creepy reputation that it was even featured on British TV's most haunted ghost hunting program. Today, the decommissioned lighthouse is owned by the National Trust and open to the public. We wonder, Stu, if you've ever visited. We'll finish up on a serial killer case. Alan Grimson was born and grew up in North Shields, and as an adult served as a petty officer in the British Navy. Whilst based in Portsmouth, he was a trainer in firefighting techniques, and used this position to select his victims. His first known victim was 18-year-old Nicholas Wright Grimson, who was on the course in November 1997. Grimson befriended the young man and offered to give him a lift home to Leicester on the weekends. In December 1997, Nicholas was seen out drinking with Grimson, and they ended up back at Grimson's flat. But when Nicholas spurned Grimson's sexual advances, he beat him and cut his throat with a carving knife. He later dumped his body on the side of a road. A year to the day later, Grimson killed his second victim, 20-year-old Sion Jenkins, in a similar scenario to his first, and dumped his body on the side of a road. Grimson was convicted in 2001 of killing both men, and the judge recommended that he serve a minimum of 22 years and that he should never be released. He also told Grimson, "You're a serial killer in nature, if not in number. You are a highly dangerous serial killer who killed two young men in horrifying circumstances." There was conflicting opinion about Grimson's mental state, with one psychiatrist claiming he was the worst sociopath he'd ever come across. Grimson is also a suspect in the disappearance of naval rating Simon Parks, who was serving on HMS Illustrious alongside Grimson when he vanished in Gibraltar in 1986. Police have also speculated that there are other unknown victims, and believe that as Grimson killed people on the 12th of December each year, that there could be anything between 11 and 20 other unidentified victims at Grimson's hands. However, despite these fears, Grimson is due to be released any day, and is already being held in open prison. So that's it for this episode of Too Close to Home. We hope you enjoyed. We'd like to say a massive thank you to all 5 of our patrons featured in this video. That's Tyler, Sandra, Valerie Marie, Thomas and Stu. We really wouldn't be able to keep up everything we do without the Patreon support. It's incredibly important to us, and we hope we give you all value by doing these Too Close to Homes. Thanks for watching, and remember, if you want your hometown featured on an episode, don't forget to check out Patreon and join our Too Close to Home tier. Thanks for watching, and as always, we'll see you in the next video.